to be talking about a subject that has been talked about for quite a long time at the state capitol. It was a very big part of what we talked about last year. There are competing bills. We are talking about, of course, the business property tax, the state general levy. And just for a little bit of background, I recently was out in Hutchinson meeting with business property tax payers, businesses from Hutchinson, with Senator Newman, and folks pretty upset about what's been happening with their business property taxes. They showed me their business property tax statements, showed me that there are increases every year, and of course we have this automatic inflator in the business property tax. Even the governor seems to be concerned about that automatic inflator that has brought these taxes from a rate of $540 million in 2001 to about $800 million this year. Given that, the concern of the property taxpayers, given the fact that this was included in our omnibus tax bill, Senate File 42, last year and was vetoed by the governor, it is back in force now because those property taxes went up yet again. People are even more concerned about it than ever because, as we've seen, the school district funding has continued to rise through referendums. And so the original intent, which was to ask the businesses to assist with the school costs through the state general levy, really has backfired. It hasn't worked well at all. In fact, their taxes have continued to go up, while the school districts continued to go back and levy back what they lost when the state took over the state aid formula. And we're going to continue to talk about that. Eric Naumann will be back in the committee tomorrow for round three, I think. We're going to be looking forward to that. But with that, there are currently three bills pending in this committee that address the statewide business property tax. The first one on our agenda, and we're going to talk about them all three at the same time. The first one is Senate File 1596. That is the bill that Chair Davids introduced in the House. We will be hearing that along with Senate File 1624, which was Senator John Peterson's proposal. That is the proposal that the governor vetoed last year. It was brought forward through Senator Michelle's committee and passed that committee, sent here. It's a very thoughtful and cautious way to address this. Senate File 1972 is a little bit more assertive when it comes to the phase-out schedule. Senate File 42 is the one that I've dropped in. That's also phasing out the state property tax. There are a few other things in a couple of these bills that we will get to. Chair David's bill also has an exemption for the first $100,000 in commercial industrial property from taxation. There's also the property tax refund program, the targeted property tax refund, or the circuit breaker that's addressed in some of them. So we're going to talk about those subjects as well, but today we're going to focus primarily on the business property tax. We do have revenue estimates of all three, which I'm happy to have, and Shelby McQuay is here. She is going to review the revenue estimates on all three. So we're going to kind of have a lay of the land here, folks, and then we're going to have quite a few testifiers who will be presenting their point of view. So with that, Ms. McQuay, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, Shelby McQuay, Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis. I'll just walk through the revenue estimates in the order that that you talked about them and that they're on the agenda for today. Senate File 1596 is the first bill on the agenda, and this bill is set apart because it permanently sets the seasonal recreational property level at $40 million. For fiscal year 20, or taxes payable 2013 and later. This proposal also excludes the first 100,000 of commercial industrial property and phases out the statewide business property tax for commercial industrial at from taxes payable 2013 until taxes payable 2033. That portion of the proposal reduces the general fund by $41.6 million in fiscal year 13, $103.6 million in fiscal year 14, and $156.2 million in fiscal year 2015. The portion of the bill that increases the homeowner's maximum property tax refund by 20% is the begins in fiscal year 13. And is everybody working off the revenue estimate? I guess I should point out. Okay. So in fiscal year 13, that's $4.7 million reduction, 4.9 and 5.1 in each of the following fiscal years. The third proposal in this bill is to increase the special refund formula from 60% to a factor of 90% for taxes payable in 2012 only. And you'll see that as the targeted refund as a reduction of $3.5 million in fiscal year 13. There's also income tax interactions in fiscal year 14 and 15. The second proposal is the...
Ms. McQuay, before you go on to the next one, a couple of quick questions for clarification purposes. Chair David's bill has the increase in the property tax refund. Does that increase the income levels or the payout on that property tax refund?
Madam Chair, I believe it just increases the payout levels, not the income levels.
And is it targeted in any way, Ms. McQuay? I mean, I think we, last year when we did change the property tax refund program, it was targeted in those middle income ranges when we added that $30 million back into the property tax refund. Is there any of that targeting that goes on in here? I hate to mix up those terms and use targeting, but is there any schedule provided as to which income levels it goes to?
The income levels that it changes are directed at incomes at $37,280 to $100,779. So it's not an increase for all income levels, just for those levels above $37,000.
Okay, and then the second question I had was relative to the refund formula. Is Chair Davis has it for one, the proposal is for 1 year, an increase to the 90%. Is that actually payable in 2012 or is it payable in 2013?
That proposal would be to, it's in payable 12. So they would see that sooner than.
And that's the refund that gets applied for in by August and then gets paid before the end of the year by the state?
Based on the language, I would, I'll have to check on that for sure, but it would be paid by the state, yeah.
All right, if you'll just check on the timing of that refund okay. And then get back to us on that, I would appreciate it. Senator Skoy.
Looking at the property tax refund provision of this bill, it looks to me like raising the cap so that money would mostly be going to those folks that are already at their maximum refund, which would mean that the refund is targeted at the higher valued homes.
Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair, the bill does make changes just to those income levels for homeowners with incomes starting at over $37,280. It does not make any changes to the incomes below that.
Senator Skoy.
Well, Madam Chair, every year it says that approximately 21,000 claimants with a household income above 37 and currently at the maximum refund. So what it's targeting is that people that are already at the maximum, it's going to increase the amount that they get. The way you get at the maximum is to have a relatively higher valued home. And so it would appear to me that it would be targeted at the higher valued homes.
Senator Skoy, I hope we'll look at that if we proceed with this proposal, because last year we purposely did not do that. We purposely targeted that $30 million towards the middle income in that range and did not try and add it at the top level or specifically at the bottom. It was definitely targeted. So we will look at that if we proceed any further on this. We may have testimony about that as well, about the impact of that. Other questions about 1596. All right, Ms. McQuay, the next one.
Madam Chair, the next Senate file is Senate File 1624, and this is the Senator Peterson bill. This bill also sets the seasonal recreational residential cabin property at $40.6 million for payable in 2013, and then begins reducing, phasing out the portion that is the commercial industrial property. The levies go to zero for taxes payable in 2026. The impact on the general fund is, in fiscal year 13, a $31 million reduction, going to $56.8 million and $72.7 million in the following fiscal years. There is additional income tax interactions associated with a reduction in property tax refunds, and those are listed also on the revenue impact, or on the revenue estimate. This bill does not include any other property tax refund proposals in it.
Are there questions about Senator Peterson's proposal? All right, and Senate File 1972.
Madam Chair, this proposal, this bill also has three proposals in it. The first one is to reduce the state general levy, and then it it provides a refund and then adjust the special targeting formula. The phase out of this general fund includes both seasonal recreational and state commercial industrial property, and the levy is repealed for taxes payable in 2020, and as you mentioned, it's the most aggressive formula. The reduction of the general levy is $40 million in the first year, $115.8 million in the second year, and $201 million in the third year. The refund of 2.621% of based on the state general levy net tax capacity is $40 million in fiscal year 13. And this is the proposal, Madam Chair, that has the refund to be paid by August 31st, 2012. And the state would reimburse the counties in this proposal. And then finally, Madam Chair, on the this proposal changes the special targeting formula and increases the refund from 60% to 70% in taxes payable in 2012 and thereafter, and that decreases the general fund by $1.76 million in fiscal year 13 and $1.1 and $1.43 in the following years. And so, Madam Chair, I think I had the refund confused, and this is the one that states in the language the payback of to the counties.
All right, members, are there questions about Senate File 1972 or the differences about any of these proposals? We're all on the same page. I'm so pleased to have Senator Peterson with us. And Senator, would you like to make some comments about your proposal? And we're going to have a lot of testifiers here. I'm sure you recognize many of them, but we would welcome your comments about the bill from there or from the testifiers table, wherever you're comfortable.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Ortman and members. I do have an A2 amendment. Do you have that, which is just a date change? From the amendment.
We do have the amendment, Senator okay. Peterson. Just give us 1 minute to hand that out.
Madam Chair and members, I can talk about that for a moment while you're
Senator Peterson Senator Peterson, has your bill been amended previously, or would this be the first amendment?
It is the second amendment.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
What this amendment, it was just simply a date change I had the wrong one in there originally. It's just changing it to 2026. So.
And with that, Senator Peterson, does it change the revenue note at all?
No, Madam Chair.
Great. Senator Michelle would move the A to Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, what are the repealers?
Senator Peterson.
In the amendment. It's like new repealers.
Sure, Madam Chair and Senator Bach. The repealer is just simply taking it away because, as you may have heard earlier, this particular bill It's a slow reduction over time so that in 2026 it goes down to zero. And we had a question raised in the previous committee about the fact that there actually wasn't a repealer. It just ran out. And so we are more comfortable actually putting a repealer in there on the same year that the tax ran out, 12 years out, actually.
That's a good question. Maybe I'll ask Council, do the other bills have the same kind of repealer? If we're phasing out and eliminating these taxes, maybe you can look at them and let us know if the others have that same kind of repealer. But with that, Senator Michelle moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm grateful for the chance to talk about this bill, Senate File 1624, for a few minutes before you today. I think this bill is in the spirit of some of the things the governor talked about in his speech. It's interesting to note that this bill came out of our Jobs and Economic Growth Committee with no opposition on a voice vote. It was a unanimous voice vote that brought it to your committee here. And I think it's a step in the right direction in terms of creating an environment where employers and businesses can be encouraged about what's happening in Minnesota. But I would also let you note that it's a moderate move forward that moves slowly and deliberately in an effort to continue to watch our economic growth as this moves forward, starting right away next year and then through to 2026 when it would be completely eliminated. As you heard earlier, what businesses deal with this statewide property tax is that it's a fixed expense that has been going up with an automatic inflating factor to the tune of about 4 to 6% every year. So you can begin to picture the challenges that folks have in paying this fixed expense, this fixed bill that they have year after year when there's a declining economy, when there's declining growth in their business. Quite frankly, those folks, all they have to do in that type of scenario is look at their fixed expense, which oftentimes is their staff. Oftentimes it's things like utility bills, property tax statements that, quite frankly, they can't do anything about because they fall into that category. What this bill would offer some measured and moderate relief to every single employer and business in Minnesota, even if you have a business that is renting property. You've probably heard of a term called triple net lease, and what that means is that the lessee actually pays the property tax for the building that they're renting. And so even a business that's actually renting from a property owner right now would see relief with this particular bill over time. With that, Madam Chair, I think that presents a clear picture of what this bill is working towards, and certainly would be willing to try and answer any questions folks may have.
Thank you, Senator Peterson.
Well, someone might as well go
Senator
first,
Buck.
Madam Chair. Senator Peterson, the bill, I think the deficit in the next biennium, and if you know what this number is, you can correct me, but I think it's something, we assume we're not going to pay schools back. And last year's actual was a cut to schools by more than $2 billion, so we assume we don't have the money to pay them back. The deficit in the next biennium is something just north of $1.3 billion that the next legislature is going to have to figure out how to balance. There's no accounting gimmicks left. We've sold future revenue streams. Did you contemplate at all the fact that this bill adds an additional $126 million to the deficit? To the $1.3 billion that already exists. Senator Peterson, I got to tell you, if this was a serious proposal, I think you should have figured out a way to pay for it. And if people are serious about this, that's what this committee should try to figure out how to do. I don't necessarily object to what you're trying to do, but we should try to figure out how we're going to pay for it so we don't leave the next group of legislators, on which there's going to be a whole bunch of new ones, we all found out yesterday, we don't leave them right away in the hole something north of $1.4 billion. That's just, there's not a question in it, Madam Chair. I just think that's a serious conversation this committee needs to have. If this is a good idea, let's figure out how we're going to pay for it.
Well, Senator Bach, I think that there are several senators that would like to respond to what you just said, but I'll let Senator Peterson begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Bach, we did have similar questions in the previous committee, and I think it's important to note that we are going to wait till we see the forecast rolling up, which I think will tell us a little bit more about the numbers that you just talked about. But it's interesting to note one of my colleagues in jobs, Senator Kelash, in fact, raised a similar question and had concerns about business owners that that may just seek to keep this rebate or this credit for themselves. And, you know, I understand that that maybe there's in every group there's people that maybe should be living their lives differently and operating their businesses differently. But the reality of the situation here, Senator Kelash was concerned that these business owners or these employers may earn a little bit more money. And I understand that could happen as you see your fixed expenses drop. You know, cash flow for that organization is going to improve. But the key is if that person does truly make more money, the Department of Revenue is going to get additional tax revenues from their income tax. They may see it slide a little bit on the property tax side, but as that fixed expense is reduced over time, I believe you'll absolutely see the income tax revenues increase along with that, backfilling the property tax reduction, which in turn will encourage more folks to move their businesses to Minnesota, I believe, and encourage businesses that are already here to stay here because they see it moving in a positive direction slowly over time while the economy is improving.
Senator Michelle.
Well, thank you, Senator Peterson. Not really in response to Senator Bach, but just to acknowledge some of our earlier discussions in the Jobs Committee environment and also the work that you're doing. I think this is exactly how you start to balance out your budgets. Because without private sector job growth, without a private sector economy that is moving again, no one's going to want to be a legislator around here, Senator Bach. We need to get this economy moving again. We need to send some signals today to job creators. And I think what's especially appealing about Senator Peterson's proposals that this would impact all businesses, all job creators, large and small, whether they're not, even if they're not making a profit this year, if this recession is still hurting them, this sends them a signal and sends them some relief. And we got to do that. We got to do that. Before something gets to the governor, we'll make sure all the accounting's done. But what I appreciate about Senator Pearson's bill the most is the signal it sends to job creators of all sizes that as this economy starts to move again, as this recession starts to move off, that this is the place to come to do business. This is the place to grow, to create jobs, and to grow your business. So we'll obviously continue to have this discussion.
Well, and I would add, Senator Bach, that what Senator Peterson's proposal would do and the others would generate economic activity in every city in the entire state. Every business owner across the state would have less of a fixed expense for their business. They're going to take that money, and they're likely to invest in more property, in expansion, and improvement of the property, in research and development, in capital equipment, in raises for their employees, for a new employee, for a bonus. There's going to be economic activity in every community across the state. And frankly, I don't know how many more vacancies you want to see in the commercial sector in the state of Minnesota. I don't know how many more you want to see where businesses are shutting down on main streets across the state of Minnesota. And so this will create the economic activity, regardless of how that business owner decides how best to invest it or spend it on behalf of his or her business. That's the economic activity we need to stimulate the economy. And it's not targeted in Minneapolis. It's not targeted in one already succeeding community. It's every community. And I think we need to find a way to prioritize that relief in our budget. And I hope you'll help.
Well, Madam Chair, if that was a question, I have an answer.
That's fair.
I'm just not sure that when we cut the property taxes for McDonald's Corporation, or Walmart, or my friend John Menard, or Home Depot, out-of-state corporations, especially in the retail business, that they're going to add jobs in Minnesota. I don't know what changes in the retail sector that makes them add a couple extra people at the McDonald's counter or at the register at Walmart or an additional greeter. Or does the money just flow to the corporate bottom line in the states with those corporate offices? That's my concern. We should have a good discussion about if this does add jobs. But what really bothers me, Senator Peterson, by the fact that it's not paid for, is you are putting this tax relief for those out-of-state companies ahead of paying back our schools. Last year, we borrowed over $2 billion from our schools. This year, they're borrowing over $500 million, our K-12 schools, in order to pay their bills because we've delayed payments to them. And now in the next biennium, we're going to say the first $126 million that comes in, we're going to buy it on property taxes before we're going to pay back the schools the money that we owe them. That's why, Senator Peterson, I really think if you could figure out a way to pay for this, I think we could have a good conversation about doing something that might stimulate the economy. But absent paying for it, the idea of doing this for those corporations that aren't located in this state and putting them ahead of our own K-12 schools is troubling to me.
Well, Senator, with all fairness, I'm not sure anybody put anything ahead of anything else here, and we do have the February forecast coming up. I hope that you'll help identify a good source of revenue to make this a priority, along with the school shift. I welcome your help. But you also, whether a question or a comment, you've drawn some hands here that from senators that would like to speak. So Senator Howell, then Senator Michelle, and then Senator Peterson.
Senator Thank Howell. You, Madam Chair. I agree that we do want to make our business environment more competitive, and hopefully this will lead to some expansion. The question I have is maybe somebody who's on the committee here, and maybe just for the record, could explain why we had the state general levy on their seasonal recreational on the cabins. And, I understand why we probably doesn't make sense to just do it on one entity like that, but I was wondering if I could get the history on that.
Well, Senator Howell, I don't know that anybody here is prepared to go on into that, but we will get you an answer on that.
Thank you.
Senator Michelle was next.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, I don't know if you'd have the same criticism. If you were being consistent, you'd have the same criticism then for Governor Dayton, because his jobs package is not paid for. You'd have the same criticism for Senator Scoy, who's got a tax credit idea, which I think makes some sense, but that's not paid for. Senator Sieben, Senator Keelan, they're all carrying elements of the government job plan, which are not paid for, which do not take care of the K-12 shifts. To be fair, that's where we are in this legislative session now. So I think we will absolutely find out a way to pay for something like this because it is a priority. I think that's why Senator Orton is taking up this bill today, even before we have the forecast, even we really know what the final numbers are, because this has to be a priority. And what I hope we're going to hear today, not from out-of-state companies, Senator Bach, but from Minnesota's finest, is what this could mean for businesses, what this could mean for job creation, and again, what it can do to send a signal to private sector job creators who are scared right now, scared of this recession, scared of more government costs and more government more government regulations. This doesn't do a lot. Right? There's a lot of members who wish you'd go farther and faster, Senator Peterson. But it's a start. It's a start. It's plant the flag at the state border saying, please come to Minnesota. Please stay in Minnesota. Do some business. So, it's still late February. We can do some governing, Senator Bach. We don't have to quite get into the campaign season.
Senator Ortman, to correct for the record, because we're on television and people are watching, I was at the press conference when Governor Dayton rolled out his jobs proposal. It is paid for. I heard him say he was going to close foreign operating corporation loopholes. There is plenty of money to do that. I, like many people in this room, understand the foreign royalty subtraction It's not hard to do. We allow Minnesota companies, good companies, to bring in corporate profits earned offshore, bring them into Minnesota tax-free. We wouldn't have to take that entire benefit away from them. We're one of a small number of states that do that. The federal government does tax those corporate profits when they come back in. Those are the kind of conversations I think this committee needs to have as to how we pay for Senator Peterson's proposal. I'm not against having a good conversation. There's pieces of this that make sense, especially for Minnesota-domiciled companies. But I just think we have to figure out how we pay for it.
Senator Bach, thank you for that. Senator Savoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Michelle, Senator Bach did answer this, but the governor's job proposal is paid for, and it's paid for through changes in the Foreign Operating Corporation provision. The reason that those changes are appropriate is because as we've gone away from the income tax being paid on a factor of sales and other activity in the state and gone toward 100% sales activity, the Foreign Operating Corporation provisions are not as necessary for those companies, so we're taking part of that away. But the other part of that bill, Senator Michelle, that I think you should consider important for Minnesota businesses is the nexus provision, because this is a provision that was brought to the Tax Committee last year by a couple of Minnesota's larger businesses that would be helpful to them. And in the previous years, it has been brought to the committee by a number of smaller Main Street businesses that are having unfair competition by some of these outside internet sales. These Main Street businesses, they do pay property tax and they do pay sales tax in this state. Sales to internet are not currently being charged sales tax. Doesn't seem fair. And so when you think about what we're going to be spending our money on in Minnesota, it seems to me that we ought to be spending it on something that actually brings jobs to the state. And the governor's proposal is directly tied to bringing jobs. The credit doesn't go out if there isn't a job created. Now, this proposal here does flow some money to businesses' bottom line. But, Senator Michelle, you're the chair of the Jobs Committee. I was wondering, in your committee, did you analyze how many jobs would actually be created by these proposals? I mean, what kind of job creation is going to come from this? From my thought, what businesses need more than this is they need customers coming in their door. I don't know if this puts any customers in any businesses' doors or if it provides any more activity for that they would have, that they would need to hire somebody, or what exactly is the numbers of jobs created with these bills that are being brought forward today.
Well, Senator Squay, I hope that you'll ask businesses in your community, because when I asked in Hutchinson, one business owner said, if I had that money, I would recarpet my premises and do upgrades. Well, that's economic activity in his community. He would get that carpet from some provider in his community, and they would engage in a transaction that's good for Minnesota business and good for the overall economy. That's what will happen with this. I mean, that is what we want to accomplish.
And
would be a good thing. But I do want to say, before we move too far from the governor's proposal, just for, you know, keeping the facts straight here, governor's jobs package is a tax increase on Minnesotans at a time when we do not need tax increases. Fiscal year 13, $21 million net increase, $4 million in 14 and 15. The tax credits, we're gonna talk about that, but that is not a long-term sustainable program for jobs, where what Senator Peterson is proposing and is proposed in these bills is a long-term plan for Minnesota businesses where they can see where the state is heading and they can invest and they can say, all right, I can see that the state is going to eliminate this portion of my fixed costs for my business, and that might encourage more investment. It certainly will lower their fixed costs. So I think we should keep the facts straight. If we're going to talk about that tax credit, we will, but make sure folks realize that what he's proposing is to raise Minnesotans' taxes.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Squay,
and Madam Chair, as a policy, I've been supportive of eliminating this statewide business tax. I've always thought the property tax should be a local tax, but you know, Senator Bach is right; it should be paid for. With regard to the trickle down, of some of this revenue trickling down and possibly, creating a job here or there, be interesting to see what the analysis would be of how much of this money would be going out of state to retail businesses that operate here, and how much of it would actually stay in Minnesota and do something to benefit Minnesota job creation.
Senator Chamberlain, and then Senator Peterson, I am going to give you the final word on this before we hear from our testifiers, and we do have a number of them, so we do want to get to them. Senator Chamberlain.
A quick point. First, Madam Chair, to your last point about the carpeting, and if he had that extra money, he'd lay carpet. And that kind of, I'll ask you this question, and I have one final comment. I'll ask Senator Peterson the question, see if how good he is on his economics. the inflator that's built into this property tax system, it's a disincentive. I mean, if you're a business, why would you say, well, in Minnesota, I'll stay in Minnesota and I'll expand my commercial industrial base here and just, increase my fixed costs that I can do nothing about. But to you, Senator Peterson, what is the multiplier effect of every dollar you put into the private sectors? I'm going to look for an economist or look up the research. But if you take a dollar, you put it back in the private sector. If you put $40 million back in the hands of private sector, how many people then become employed, or how much revenue do you generate because someone wants to put new carpet or new tile in their store? They decide to put up that concrete block retaining wall because they got some extra money, or they decide, well, since this thing is phasing out, we can open up another retail facility or commercial industrial facility.
The hands are going up here.
So that's just my thought, just a thought and a comment, and I'll try to find that other number myself. But thank you,
Senator Chamberlain. I just want to say I had that conversation with Senator Pogemiller in this very committee back in 2003, trying to make the exact same point. Wow. Senator Peterson, do you want to comment on that and make other comments with respect to the conversation going on here?
Sure, Madam Chair. And Senator Chamberlain, I'm grateful that you decided you offered you'd find your own answer to that. But I, and just in response to Senator Bach and Senator Skoy, relating to the whole property tax situation in the community and the schools that were referenced, In my community, for example, I don't have a Costco right now. I'd love to have a Costco in St. Cloud for a number of reasons, and a big part of that reason is the property tax that they would pay and support our school district and support our city and support our wastewater and a water system with that type of development in our community, along with the jobs right down to the Salvation Army bell ringer that would likely be bringing a bell outside of their door for 3 or 4 weeks through the holidays, raising money for homeless and that shelter in our community. That's the type of development and growth that we want to encourage, because when Costco is looking for a site, I want them to choose Minnesota. I want them to choose St. Cloud. And if we can take this simple, moderate, conservative step to reducing this bill over time, I believe it'll move Minnesota up on Costco's list when they're citing stores and when they're looking for locations. I believe it's going to move us up farther on that list, and it's going to bring those types of developments, those types of employers to our communities first and before other states. Those are reasons why we'd be grateful for your support on this effort moving forward as we see those budget numbers and get these types of credits paid for in the near future.
I don't think anybody's mentioned the Tax Foundation study, 45th worst business tax climate in the nation. I think that's to your point, Senator Peterson. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of quick points. The presence of a Costco is a function of something else. Costco is going to come to Minnesota because there is going to be folks who have decent, well-paying jobs who can actually buy stuff. So I hope we're not gearing our tax policy and our economic development priorities around attracting retail all over the state. That's not going to be what gets the state off the dime and moving forward. It's going to be the kind of investments we make in our research and commercializing ideas into a robust and diverse economy, and that only comes about if we have a great infrastructure and if we have, you know, great universities and great Minsky system and great education and great quality of life. So I hope we're not going to be running around chasing a bunch of retail establishments and call and, you know, and driving their property taxes down and calling that some sort of economic development engine, because that would be a quick race to the bottom. And Senator Chamberlain's question implied that somehow every public dollar doesn't have, it's spent, doesn't have some sort of benefit to our economy, both in a very direct fashion as well as in terms of long-term positioning us for long-term economic competitiveness. Every economist over the last few years, as we've come into the Great Depression and as we've seen states retrench and pare down the roles of public employment and pare back the level of public services, has said to us repeatedly, this is only a recipe for exacerbating and extending the depression by pulling back those sorts of public spending in the public sphere, both because we cut jobs directly from the public sector that aren't going to magically reappear in the private sector in the near term, and we're reducing essential public services that are vital to the good functioning of our economy. So I think we just need to get some facts laid out on the table and not indulge ourselves in some set of ideological beliefs that have no foundation in research.
Well, Senator Dibble, I wish you'd been here last year when we had the economists come and talk to this committee and the site selectors that talked about why businesses do or don't come to a particular state, and the business tax climate has everything to do with that decision. It may not be the only factor, but it's one of them. And to Senator Chamberlain's point before he leaves, the general economic theory is, and it's indisputable, that a dollar spent in the private sector has a better return on investment than a dollar spent in the public sector, because in the public sector you have all those administrative costs that get siphoned off. And that's general economic theory 101. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, your general economic theory 101 has a lot of people who would not agree with that. And yes, there are administrative costs in government and there are administrative costs in private businesses too. And actually, employees do that administrative work in both government and in business. In terms of the retail, I always think the idea if we raise the taxes on a Burger King in Roseville, they're not going to move to Hudson, Wisconsin. There's already a Burger King in Hudson, Wisconsin, and frankly, they want to sell burgers where they are. Retail units, they're going where the business is. And if you want to help them, maybe undoing the tax increase on renters from last year would help. Those are folks who need the money. And frankly, they're the ones who patronize the stores. So I think that's – but there are so many things we've been talking about here that really do deserve some comments. I mean, the statewide business property tax, that the artificial limitation on what – how much it grows, the automatic increase, as you're calling it now. I think if we rolled that back – if we went back to when it was first put in place, took that off, and let it just go with the – property value, I think the business community would have paid much, much higher property taxes. So that was actually a savings. Matter of fact, a number of years ago, when everybody was complaining about how this thing was raising, how they didn't like us to be letting property taxes go so high, I thought, well, why don't we take this this change off of the automatic increases off the statewide business property taxes. Frankly, what that would have had was the impact of raising property taxes. So it's a little bit disingenuous to suggest that that's now an automatic increase when over the past decade it's actually been holding down the statewide business property tax compared to what they'd be paying under the local levies. But this whole concept, I think the tax incidence study suggests that half the business property taxes, if we cut business property taxes, half that money is going out of the state. And frankly, if you're increasing property taxes on renters as we did last year and homeowners, that's all staying in the state. That hurt is going to happen. But finally, again, one of the points Senator Dibble made about employment. Yes, you listen to the economic reports in recent months on unemployment. Private sector added some jobs, but that was largely offset by cuts in teachers and police and firefighters and public employees. They're all jobs. There's all the kind of things that our constituents need, public and private sector, and this concept that only the private sector creates jobs and only the private sector does good things is kind of a misread on what's going on in the economy. And we can agree or disagree, but it's not economics 101.
Well, Madam Chair, to get to a little higher division than 101, we all have seen, there's been some incredible research done relative to early childhood funding since I came here. And I think most of us have heard people from the Federal Reserve, Art Rolnick and others come here and talk about if you really want to make a good investment in Minnesota's future, invest in early childhood spending. And the studies show that the return on investment to the state is about $16 for every dollar that you spend on paying for early childhood funding for Minnesota's youngest citizens. That's where the good investment is. That's where the big return on investment is, frankly, for Minnesota businesses, too, as we create a quality workforce for them, because businesses don't make money without a quality workforce. And investment in early childhood, we've all seen the studies here in recent years, is an incredible return on investment.
Senator Bogg, this is why I love the Tax Committee, because we talk about everything here. We talk about economic theory. We talk about Costco. We talk about early education. I mean, this is the place to be. I've always thought it.
Senator Peterson, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Senator Howell, very briefly, and then Senator Peterson gets the final word before we do move on to our testifiers, and hopefully everyone will be very respectful and make sure we hear from those folks that came to share their thoughts with us. Senator Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Senator Peterson for bringing us forward. I do think, you know, we talk a lot about how we're taxed, and I think it is important that we are concerned about the sticker rate of doing business in our state. I mean, we've talked about that. We should have an effective rate, and that's what that should be our sticker rate, because we have this real high thing, and then we use all sorts of different programs, whether it's Job Z or TIF districts. And to Senator Marty's point, you know, you shouldn't be using a TIF district to bring in retail,
right?
And some people do that. You should be using TIF districts to bring in manufacturing jobs. And so, you know, I do think it's important that we get to, you know, an effective rate, and that effective rate should be our sticker rate. It shouldn't be this real high rate, and then we have all these different tax exemptions. So thank you.
Members, I am going to have a handout for you all that you can look at that talks about the different effective tax rates for each of the different major classifications of property, and we'll take it up tomorrow. We can talk about that, but I want to hand it out for purposes of this discussion because Senator Howe brought it up. The effective tax rate for commercial industrial is much higher in Minnesota than all the others, and we should be mindful of that. Senator Peterson, your final comments on this bill, and I hope you're going to stick around for the rest of the conversation to the extent you can.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the latitude on this issue. And I could have used a different example other than Costco, and maybe they probably should have. From my perspective, I could have been talking about tamales. We've talked about everything else. And the reason I bring up tamales because Senator Torres Ray and Jobs talked about her favorite restaurant in her district is a sole proprietorship. A man who makes tamales, the best tamales in the state, I'm told. Quite frankly, that restaurant owner is going to get the same percentage of tax break with this bill that's slowly, moderately over time, add cash flow back to his business the same as it would for Costco. That same business has the same impact on the schools that we talked about and the property tax in general. And I wish I would have used that example rather than Costco, because I believe that's the reason why it came out of Jobs Committee with her favorable vote and a favorable vote from without any opposition at all on a voice vote in the Jobs Committee because of that reason.
Senator Peterson, I think this is about as much about Main Street Minnesota businesses as any. So thank you for that. So we are going to move on to Kay Rocco. And if Doug Fulton and Kevin Bedore could also join us so we can move through testimony here. And Senator Peterson, if you want to join us at the table.
Thank you.
We are going to ask folks to stick to 3 minutes so that we can hear from everybody that's on the agenda, and we are not going to be done with this conversation today, so I invite you all to come back as well. But let's begin with you, Ms. Raga. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, good morning. My name is Kay Rocco, and I am the Director of Public Policy for NIAP, the Commercial Real Estate Development Association, representing the interests of owners, developers, and managers of commercial real estate, along with the thousands and thousands of businesses who are the tenants in the buildings that we own and manage. And I want to thank you for voting to phase out the state general property tax last session, and also for considering the issue again this year. This morning, we're going to present the perspective of a business site selector, lease negotiator, an owner-investor of commercial real estate, along with the perspective of a business owner who operates a business here in Minnesota. And I just want to make a couple of points, some of which have been stated already this morning. First of all, for Minnesota's thousands of job-creating small businesses, our dozens of Fortune 500 employees, and our tens of thousands of entrepreneurs, cost matters. And one of the costs that matters the most are the fixed costs over which they have no control, such as the property taxes they must pay on the buildings that they either lease or own. Secondly, I would also like to stress that there is little or no relationship between a building's market value and the size of the businesses that occupy that building and the taxes that they pay. In fact, many relatively small businesses in terms of income, employee count, or space occupied are located in large, high-valued buildings such as downtown office towers or suburban industrial and office buildings. And if policymakers are truly interested in working with and helping the business community, the private sector, the elimination of estate property tax is one way to do it, because it is a fixed cost that they all pay. It doesn't make any difference if they make any money or not. It doesn't make any difference if they're big or small. It doesn't make any difference whether they lease or own the building. It is a fixed cost that they all must pay. And I really appreciate your taking time to listen to me and our testifiers this morning. And thank you also for supporting Minnesota's private job sector creators. Doug?
Thank you. Good morning. Mr. Fulton, welcome to the committee.
Senator Ortman, thank you, members of the committee. My name is Doug Fulton, and I am a commercial real estate professional. My primary work is in advising companies, large and small, with site selection and lease transaction work, both in Minnesota and around the country. I'm not a lobbyist, but I am active in NAAP, which is our association representing the businesses in our office parks. In my work, I spend a lot of time advising companies, big and small, office and industrial, metro and outstate, understand their occupancy costs. And when a company leases space or they purchase a building, the cost of that occupancy includes a number of things. It includes construction costs to build out the space. It includes rent or a mortgage over the term of the lease. And it includes operating expenses. And that last item, operating expenses, includes maintenance, insurance. But the largest item that includes is property taxes, with property taxes being the largest item. I like to put it in perspective in terms of what it costs for an individual employee. And at today's property tax rate of 3%, you can assume that every employee in your office who sits in about 300 square feet of space at $3 a foot a year costs an employee about $900 or $1,000 per year. So that entrepreneur, whether they're in a business in the metro area, Edina, or Grand Rapids, is their commercial property tax for that employee is $900 to $1,000 a year. And the unfortunate part is that's a tax, a cost that has continued to increase each year, and is a cost that business simply doesn't control. The state general tax alone has increased 38% since it was put in place since 2002. It is my experience that we in Minnesota have conditioned employers to accept higher property taxes as a condition of doing business in Minnesota for quality of life, for workforce, and for state amenities. And for years, we have rolled our eyes as manufacturers and call centers and other businesses have moved to South Dakota and Wisconsin to save commercial property taxes. But in the last 5 years, it's also been my experiences that other businesses, a medical device company that moves to Texas, a pharmaceutical company that expands in Alabama instead of Minnesota, and a sports utility company that moves its manufacturing to Mexico, are making decisions that additional investment or growth will go to another state or a region instead of expanding in Minnesota. Wouldn't it be great to get Minnesota back to a point where our state is both a great place to do business as well as a competitive place? Costs do matter. Commercial property taxes do matter to job creators. And I want to thank you for helping understand this important issue.
Mr. Fulton, thank you for your testimony. Mr. Bedore, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Kevin Bedore, and I represent Japs Olson Company. We're the manufacturers. Japs Olson is a commercial printer and direct mailer located in St. Louis Park. We have a 105-year-old history as a family business that operates in Minnesota and proud Minnesota ownership. The vast majority of our 640 employees work in the St. Louis Park facility and live in Minnesota. However, 95% of our customers are located outside the state of Minnesota. The commercial printing and direct mail industry is a fragmented, hyper-competitive industry that operates on razor-thin profits. The past few years, Japs Olson has experienced both sales and profit declines as we are forced to drop pricing and compete in the national marketplace. While we compete nationwide, large concentration of our competitors are across the border in Wisconsin and Iowa. From my position, Japs Olson has an equal playing field with major expenses like materials and, to some extent, labor. However, we are at a disadvantage when it comes to property costs that include commercial property tax. In 2011, Japs Olson paid $770,000 in property taxes on our properties at 7500 Excelsior Boulevard and 7400 Excelsior Boulevard. That is a huge expense to us, no matter how you slice it. It's a tough nut to crack. It's $770,000 that is not being invested into the Japs Olson for better equipment or for more employees. It's an anchor around our necks as we fight to bring more work to Minnesota rather than lose it across state lines. Let me be clear. We are Minnesotans, born and raised here. Our loyalties are with Minnesota. Please give us a playing field to compete in this brutal business environment. And we plan to survive, we plan to expand, we plan to add jobs, and we plan to show the nation that Minnesota can outperform anyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bedore, may I ask you very quickly, if you don't mind, and if this, if you don't want to answer, fine, but of your $770,000, how much of that in 2011 was the state general levy portion?
I do not have that information at this
point. If you would share that with us, if you'd like to, I would appreciate that. My understanding is the general rule of thumb is about 30%. So I'd be interested, because I think 30% is raised at the state level. You're investing in your local community. Even if we eliminated the state general levy, you're still a partner with your local communities, your schools, but that 30% would eventually go off of your property tax statement.
Well, so, any amount helps.
For sure, and I hope to hear from you if you don't mind.
Sure.
We also have, are you Mr. Reiling?
Madam Chair.
Welcome to the
Senators. My name is Mark Reiling. I'm a commercial real estate broker with Cassidy Turley, and I'm also a commercial property owner investor. Businesses, as you've heard, in Minnesota pay property taxes as to whether or not they're an owner or a tenant. And most space, if you're a tenant, is rented on a net basis, meaning the business pays its proportionate share of the operating expenses and real estate taxes in the building that they occupy. And to kind of put what Doug said in perspective, an average office tenant in the metro area will pay 15% of its total rent as real estate taxes. If you're in a industrial facility like Mr. Boudour's at Japs Olson, it's 17.5%. And if you're a retailer, it's about 16% of your total rent goes to real estate taxes. However, that amount can vary dramatically. For example, I own a small 18,000 square foot retail center in Savage where the typical our tenants pay 24% of their rent goes to real estate taxes. So they're paying $7.64 a square foot in real estate taxes. It's a big number. And what happens and the impact of this is I'm negotiating a lease right now with it's a franchise operation, and they're saying, Mark, look, we only can pay so much rent based on the sales we estimate we can do at your center. And so when you take from that the real estate taxes and other operating expenses, it leaves what the return is to the owner. Okay? And so as our operating expenses go up, particularly taxes, that reduces the net, which ultimately reduces the assessed value, okay, because it reduces value, which I protest the taxes, right? So the assessed values go down, and that means that cities, counties, and school districts then effectively have to raise the tax rate to make up for that, and hurts all across the board. The other thing it does, it starts putting a gap between market rents and the rents that are needed to support new development in our state. And so when the portion of the rent that goes to the owner, when that gets reduced, it creates a gap for what's needed today to support this new development. And so in effect we're hurting ourselves, and you know, every time we raise it, we're just kind of adding another boat anchor that we got to drag along to move forward. The other thing that I'm seeing is I'm involved in a building in the warehouse district called the Colonial Warehouse, and we have a lot of small incubator businesses. They're e-commerce, they're internet marketing. I just signed a lease on Monday with a medical company that's working on arterial fibrillation. And they're asking me specifically as we're going through the lease, they're saying, now what about this pass-through and these real estate taxes? Are they going to go up? Because we only have so much money that we've raised, you know, through our angel investors. You know, so they're very careful. And so they are particularly concerned about the ability to work through the money they have to be able to get, you know, through the clinical trials to get their, you know, product launched. And so, as these other gentlemen have said, every dollar counts. So it doesn't matter if you're big or small, they all count. And I'm trying to say that I see it particularly from these small incubator businesses, some of which in this past year literally were in their, two people in their homes, and now have leased space because they got some big national contract. And so there's money coming from New York into our state. And the money flows both ways. And
Madam Chair,
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and ma'am and gentlemen. I agree with what you guys just said. You know, I think that property taxes are a real issue for Minnesota businesses. I mean, it's also a real issue for Minnesota homeowners. And you know, we should try to keep property taxes low for everybody in this state. And as you're seeing with this bill, what it takes is it takes some state dollars being infused into the system to keep property taxes down. And if you look at, you know, the efforts that have gone on over the last 8-9 years, there have been initiatives to try to keep property taxes down. It's been kind of a challenge because we were operating under a governor who didn't believe in any state dollars going into these initiatives. But it's hard for me to see that they weren't working, because even the program that was characterized as a not functioning homestead market value credit, when those programs are eliminated, you see the results this year in your property tax bills. And so, you know, I think that we need to do an effort for property tax relief for you and for your businesses, because it's important for Minnesota's economy. We also need to be concerned about Minnesota homeowners and put some dollars into property tax relief for everybody. And thank you for your testimony. It was very good.
And thank you, folks. We are going to ask Mr. Tom Hesse, Jason Burnick, Mike Hickey, and Jeff Dotseth to join us at the table. And I would just respond, Senator Scoy, we have a property tax refund program, as you know, that is dedicated to helping homeowners that are struggling with property taxes. We have the circuit breaker program, but we have very little to help our business owners when they're struggling to pay their local property taxes. And I think that it's time that we look at that. And so I may disagree all day long about the market value homestead credit. I think that the exclusion did its work. I think it did exactly what it was designed to do, which was to minimize the impact on homeowners. But now we need to look at the second piece of that reform, which was the business property tax. Senator Scoy.
Yeah, well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you're absolutely right. The exclusion did shift the the state dollars that used to be paid on to our local property taxpayer, and it did protect the homeowners to some what, but it just shifted that onto ag land and the CI. I mean, that's what that did. I mean, those local dollars had to be raised somewhere within that jurisdiction, and you excluded the value of the homes, so it shifted onto the other properties. I mean, that's what happens in a local property tax system. And so, we do have a small amount of money that went into PTR, and there's a little bit proposed in one of these bills to go into the circuit breaker program. But, you know, $30 million here isn't enough to make up for the $560 million that was eliminated for the biennium on the market value homestead credit elimination. It just can't make it up. So, we had a lot of work to do to get these property taxes back in line with where we expect them to be and the revenue that's generated for Minnesota governments, and it's going to take some state resources at some level.
Well, yeah. Senator Scoy, I do have to disagree. The agricultural homestead market value credit was off the table last year. Their agricultural values have gone up in the state. The market values have gone up. I mean, I think there are a lot of ways that we could analyze this, and we should analyze it. I assure you we will. But I don't think that there are as many givens as you think, and there's also no reason to assume that the local level folks needed to continue to spend the same amount. So there are different ways to look at this, but I do want to be respectful of the time of the folks that are here.
But
Senator Scoy, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do need to be accurate in what we're saying. And a number of the counties that I represent had 0% levy increases. Becker County would be one. I visited with the county board. The elimination of the homestead market value credit to that county was $1.2 million of state money that's going to be paid by the local property taxpayer. The value exclusion did relieve some of that cost burden from homeowners, but the $1.2 million had to come from somewhere. So it came from CI and the ag land. And those farmers in those jurisdictions, a lot of them are seeing 20 to 35% property tax increases. Yes, there is some land value increase, but not nearly enough to make up that kind of impact. Most of that was due to the shift due to the 90% value exclusion.
I said we will continue to analyze that question, Senator Scoy. With that, Mr. Hesse.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're here to support the idea of reducing business property taxes through a phase-out of the statewide general levy, and just for a couple of reasons. First, as been alluded to, we also hear, as you do, about business property tax burdens when we're on the road. The last iteration of Minnesota Taxpayers Association studies have Minnesota commercial property about 10th highest in the nation. It hovers around 10th, depending on the year. And for industrial property, it hovers around 15th highest in the nation. So there certainly is room to make some improvement there. And this method, reducing or phasing out the statewide property tax, is the most direct way to provide businesses relief. It doesn't have the unintended consequences or shifting of burdens that other mechanisms, playing around with class rates would have. This is a direct way to provide businesses relief that certainly will make a difference. So we support your efforts. I'll turn it over to Jason Burnick, and he can tell you about the property taxes, the burdens that he faces.
Thank you. Mr. Burnick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Jason Burnick. I represent Burnick's. We're a fourth-generation family-owned business. I'm one of the fourth-generation family members. We have a fifth generation family members also getting involved in our business, and we have six facilities in Minnesota and one facility in Wisconsin. Our headquarters is in St. Cloud, Minnesota, and we've been working in the Minnesota area for 96 years. This is our 96th year of being in business. So. We've been around a while, and we employ over 500 people in the state of Minnesota. And when it comes to the property tax piece, we currently pay at our headquarters facility, which is our largest. Costs us $228,000 a year. $60,000 of that is the statewide property tax. An example I'd like to point out, since we do have facilities around the state, we have a facility in Duluth, Bemidji, Brainerd, Wilmer, and St. Cloud, and we also have a facility in the Twin Cities. To compare some of this with our facility in Dresser, Wisconsin, roughly the Duluth facility is roughly the same size as our Dresser facility. So just wanted to compare the two property taxes we pay between the locations. And the statewide portion of our Duluth facility is nearly $29,000. And to compare roughly the same size facility in Wisconsin is less than $300 for the statewide portion of property tax. So for us, this is the Minnesota seems rather high on this, and actually it's probably not a fair tax to begin with when it comes to the statewide property tax. We view that as more of a local funding source. So we feel that it should be phased out or at least reduced.
Mr. Burnick, thank you for your testimony. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, just a question of clarification. In those two property tax cases, the Duluth and Dresser one, was that total property taxes or that you're just saying a statewide portion of?
I was pointing out the statewide portion.
Do you know what it is for the total state and local?
Just for the record, I just want to make sure we're clear. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, do you know what it is for the total state and local property tax levies for the Dresser, Wisconsin one and the Duluth one?
Yes, the total property tax for our Duluth facility is $102,000, with the Dresser facility total property tax of $39,000. Excuse me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burnick. That's eye-opening. We also have Mr. Hickey. Welcome to the committee. And Mr. Burnick, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. And I just want to make a quick comment. And actually, one of our members is here today, Jeff Dotsett. So real happy you could drive down from Zimmerman and join us today. We strongly support this bill. And just want to thank you for bringing it forward again, and Senator Peterson for bringing it forward again. We strongly supported it last year, and we support it now. This is something that really needs to be done in this state. As other witnesses have said, it's a large fixed cost that all businesses have to pay regardless of their situation, and this would be a huge improvement, getting close to a 1/3% reduction for people on a large fixed cost. So it remains to be a real high priority for NFIB on tax legislation, and thank you for bringing it forward. But I'm not going to take any more time up because Mr. Dotsett owns a few commercial buildings himself and is very active in commercial real estate, and I wanted to let him comment on the bill.
Mr. Dotsett, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to come here and speak on behalf of this bill. I just have to say that have you guys talked to Main Street lately and actually listened to your constituents? We're hemorrhaging out there. Something needs to change, and it's not affecting McDonald Corporation. It's affecting Main Street, Minnesota, and this is what we really need to look at. This is who it's affecting. It's affecting jobs. If we can't, if we're paying this kind of money on taxes out there, guess what? Everyone here that spoke today has spoke right on. We can't hire people. We need to choose. Are we going to eliminate a job, or are we going to pay our taxes? That's a big thing we need to consider. I represent the properties that I own personally, various counties in the state of Minnesota, Carlton County, rural Minnesota, Mille Lacs County, Sherburn County, Hennepin County. It's no different than any of these counties. It's just it might be different numbers, but then we look at the vacancy rates. Number one is, have you driven through Main Street and looked at the vacancies that we're experiencing there? Each and every one of you drive through your town and realize that everyone's been affected here. And if we can get a reduction in this tax, it will definitely improve every one of us out there. We found that a lot of these properties have become unmarketable. I've got some of my properties that reality is we bring them in, we've got an interested prospect. They look at it, and they realize that, gee, these taxes, these are an ongoing thing. do I need to have this infrastructure? Do I have to have this brick and mortar? Or can I do something differently? Or can I move to a different state? I think we all know that, that's the competition that we have right now is if I'm looking to do a startup business, would I do another business here in the state of Minnesota? Right now, I'm going to be honest with you, no. The only thing that holds me to Minnesota is family roots. Otherwise, there's no benefit that I can see as far as starting a new business in the state at this time. And one big factor are the property taxes that we're paying right now in the commercial realm. Bottom line is that we just need to have a new confidence in our state government. And I think this is a good indicator. If we can move forward with this, this is a good shot in the arm for all of us. Again, it is affecting Main Street. I guess I just ask you to consider this, and I thank you very much for your time today.
Mr. Dotseth, thank you for coming and for your testimony today. Gentlemen, we have with us Jill Larson from the Business Partnership, Paul Eager from the Minnesota Retailers, and Gary Carlson is here. Members, Keith Carlson has sent a letter instead. It's in your packet. It's dated February 22. I hope you'll take a look at it. He specifically supports the Metro County Intercounty Association supports the property tax relief portions of the bills, the property tax refund, and the one-time refund. He says he does not support, the counties do not support providing any homeowner relief for the local governments acting as intermediaries. Member counties cannot accept a return to the deceptive practice which allowed the state to underfund the credits reimbursement in 9 out of 10 years. He continues on, but I hope that you will look at this letter from the Metro Intercounty Association from Keith Carlson. Ms. Larson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jill Larson. I represent the Minnesota Business Partnership. Got a few comments. Many of the comments have been stated by other testifiers, so I'll just try to summarize. We do support the proposals before you to reduce the state business property tax. As was mentioned earlier, it is a cost of doing business, a very large cost of doing business, and if the legislature can help reduce the cost of doing business in Minnesota, that will help make us be more competitive as compared to other locations. As you know, our companies are being courted every day by other states and, frankly, other countries to expand elsewhere. Companies that are looking to move here are comparing us with other locations. And a competitive tax environment is one of the factors that they look at when they are making those decisions. The economy is starting to improve. Businesses are looking to grow. They're looking for the best place to grow. And I think these proposals send the message to businesses that this is a place to come. The proposals are relatively modest in terms of the tax relief, but they do send the right message. With respect to business property taxes versus homeowners, I understand that some homeowners are concerned about their taxes, but business property still pays an effective tax rate almost 3 times higher than residential property. Business property represents about 13% of all of the market value in the state, but pays 32% of all the property taxes. And as was mentioned earlier, you know, we have made some progress in terms of our high rankings. Back in the late 90s, we had the highest business property tax in the country. And because of some of the reforms that were made back in the late 90s and the early 2000s, we have come down in our rankings. But for a high-value property in the metro area, we're still ranked about 9th. And according to the Taxpayers Association, if the statewide property tax were eliminated altogether, that ranking would fall to 19th in the country. So it would make a very large difference. So appreciate the proposals, support them, and would be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Ms. Larson, can you just repeat that? You said we are currently at what ranking, and it would drop to 19th? I heard that part.
Madam Chair, according to the Taxpayers Association, this is for $1 million urban property. We would fall from 10th highest in the country to 19th highest. And in the rural areas for a similarly valued property, we would fall from 13th highest to 24th highest.
Thank you, Ben, for that. Appreciate it. Mr. Is it Eager?
It's Eager, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, what is your name,
it's
sir?
Paul Egger, Madam
Egger.
Chair.
Egger. Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Paul Egger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. And Madam Chair, I just want to thank you and this committee for the additional support for the property tax refund program that was in the tax bill last year. You had a brief discussion about the additional $30 million that was put into the PTR, and I'm just here again to voice the realtor's support for anything that you can do to continue to utilize the circuit breaker program as the means for delivering property tax relief. As this committee is well aware, the property tax refund program is property tax relief that's delivered directly to the homeowner. It's income tested so that it's getting to the people most in need of the relief. And as the committee moves forward this year, we encourage you, if the resources are available, as you're looking at property tax relief, not only for CI, but to keep the PTR program on the table as well. And thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. Appreciate your testimony. Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I understand that today's hearing is really focused more on the business property tax aspects of these three bills. Like Mr. Keith Carlson, I'd just like to express our support for using the PTR and targeting mechanisms in Senate File 1596 and the targeting mechanism in Senate File 1972 as a way to provide additional tax relief to property owners. Like the Minnesota Intercounty Association, we too would prefer to not be the intermediary between the state and taxpayers as you structure any sort of tax relief program. So I just would like to go on record on that. On the business property tax pieces of these three bills, we don't have, the League of Cities does not have specific positions on the phase out of the business property tax, the exclusion of the first $100,000 of business property value from the state business property tax, nor do we have any position on the credit that's in Senate File 1972. I will say that as we traveled the state last fall, I did hear from a lot of our local mayors and council members about concerns about viability of their local businesses, and I just want to go on record saying that our local mayors and council members are concerned about jobs and viability of their businesses. We don't have a specific position on the business tax relief in these bills. I do want to raise one concern with the three bills, and that is the long-term effect of these bills and the phase-out of the business property tax on the state budget deficit. I think you debated that before testimony started. But all three of these bills do add to the long-term state deficit, all else being equal. And that does raise a concern for us as your partners at the local level in providing services. So I would just like to go on record saying that we do have the concerns on the long-term deficit. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. All right, members, we have no further business before us. We do have a committee hearing tomorrow, and I was just trying to get a quick update. I know that Eric Naumann is going to be back, so I know you're all going to want to be here for that, part three. And we also have Senator DeKreif's bill on sales and use tax related to rent lease to own vehicles, and Senator Peterson's repealing the 2% contractor withholding tax requirement. And to all those that came and joined us in this conversation, we appreciate your testimony and your participation. Thank you. And we are adjourned.
So excited. Right now, I'm going to email the piece to me to sell the statue.
Yeah, I am.
So what do you know?
See if he has any insurance to the town. Normally do. We want to change it.
Yeah.
Property tax bill. But the testifiers are going to. Can I have that back?
Yeah.
Well, for a minute, I guess.
Yeah, we didn't. I probably should have laid them all over, but okay. You can have one of these. I don't need.
Before the ink dries.